Give me love. Give me peace on earth, sings George Harrison. Isn't that what we all want? Peace on earth. So how do we get there? Our guest today, the Reverend John Deere, says we get there by following the teachings of Jesus and Gandhi. Hello, folks. We are Solutions of Balance. We're happy you can join us today. You're listening to Forward Radio WFMP 106.5 FM. Solutions of Balance is a program of and sponsored by Forward Radio. The following is part of WFMP's public affairs educational programming. The views expressed are those of our guests and not that of the station, nor its board of directors. If you'd like to share your views, you can contact us at solutionsofbalance18@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Our guest today is a nationally known author, Catholic priest, and political activist, Reverend John Deere. The event that featured John Deere was sponsored by the Thomas Merton Center at Bellarmine University, Lowell's Earth and Spirit Center, and co-sponsored by the Lowell Fellowship of Reconciliation. The John Deere presentation occurred at St. Agnes Church in Lowell, April 14, 2024. Today's broadcast is the first in a two-part series that will feature John Deere. Mark Mead from Bellarmine's Thomas Merton Center will welcome the live audience, and Lowell's Corey Lockhart will introduce John Deere.
Good evening. Welcome, everyone. Very grateful for Compassionists for their invitation, for St. Agnes for hosting us. We're doing what we can, but thank you for being here. My name is Mark Mead. I'm the Assistant Director of the Thomas Merton Center at Bellarmine University. And on behalf of the Merton Center and our co-hosts, Compassionist Earth and Spirit Center, I welcome you to this discussion of Father John Deere's book, The Gospel of Peace. I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors of the event, Strathmore Presbyterian Church and the Louisville Chapter of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Fellowship of Reconciliation, FOR, has long hosted the third Thursday lunch speaker series, and over the last year, the series has alternated between live events with lunch at Hotel Louisville at 2nd and Broadway, and virtual events over Zoom. Next Thursday's event will be held over Zoom. Our speaker, Farah Montarizadeh, one of the co-founders and the coordinator of the Louisville Ceasefire Coalition, will present Women of Iran, a Feminist Perspective. So Corey Lockhart is going to introduce our speaker, and I know she's known to many in this room. Corey is an educator, artist, writer, public speaker, and peacemaker. She facilitates classes and workshops on compassion and nonviolence for local, national, and international audiences. She's written programs for Just Faith Ministries and other organizations, and worked over several years as a human rights defender with the community peacemaker teams in Palestine. In April 2016, in Rome, she was a participant in the Vatican Nonviolence and Just Peace Conference that Father John Deere was also a part of. Corey is passionate about practicing and sharing the tools of nonviolence.
Good evening. I am delighted to introduce you to Father John Deere. Father John Deere is a world-renowned activist and author who currently teaches nonviolence and peace at the Beatitude Center in Morro Bay, California. A Nobel Peace Prize nominee, he works in the tradition of Dr. King and Gandhi for the nonviolent abolition of war, racism, the death penalty, poverty, environmental destruction, and nuclear weapons. He has worked closely with other peacemakers like Thich Nhat Hanh, Phil and Dan Berrigan, Mother Teresa, Martin Sheen, Joan Baez, Cesar Chavez, James Lawson, and Coretta Scott King. From 1998 to 2001, he served as executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation USA, the largest interfaith peace organization in the US. He co-founded Campaign Nonviolence, a national week of activism against war, poverty, environmental destruction, and racism. And he served on the staff of its host organization, Pace Bene. Father John was arrested during the 1993 Plowshares action against nuclear weapons in North Carolina and over 80 other times in acts of civil disobedience. He participated in the 2016 Vatican Conference on Nonviolence and Just Peace in Rome, and his contributions of background material for a speech by Pope Francis in 2017 marked the first statement on nonviolence in Catholic Church history. Father John's 35 books include Thomas Merton, Peacemaker, The Beatitudes of Peace, Jesus the Rebel, Seeds of Nonviolence, Mary of Nazareth, and his autobiography, A Persistent Peace. He'll speak today about his latest book, The Gospel of Peace, a commentary on Matthew, Mark, and Luke from the perspective of nonviolence. And so let's give a warm welcome to Father John Deere.
Hello, everybody. Hey, thank you, Corey, for welcoming me. And of course, already I'm having sound problems, and it's like that sad story of the young priest giving his first sermon, and he's very nervous, and he comes to the microphone and he says, "Something's wrong with this microphone," and the congregation goes, "And also with you." I told that joke every time I've been in Louisville. So some of you have heard it before. Thank you all for coming, and thank you for welcoming me, Corey. I want to give a really big shout out to my friends at the Thomas Merton Center who made this possible, especially Mark Mead. Please join me. And thank you, man. It was a lot harder work than you realize. Thank you, Mark. I'm so grateful. And to Paul and to Gordon, if you're listening, wherever you are, Gordon. And a shout out to my other friends here. And hey, thanks for coming out in the rain. Nice to see you. I'm traveling around the country talking about Jesus and my new book. I know, what's my problem? I can't figure it. And I'm on a 65-city, 5-month speaking tour. I'm trying to impress you. And I think this is about number 35. And I was in Erie Friday night, and I spoke to 600 people at the cathedral in Harlem on Sunday. And then I was in the eclipse. And then I was at Lexington. It was a real setback for the church in Lexington. And then I was in Nashville last night, and I'll be in Cincinnati tomorrow night. And Detroit on Saturday for my friend Bishop Tom Gumbleton's funeral, and then Cleveland on Sunday and Toronto on Monday, and that's as far as I know. I'm still trying to impress a Mark, and it's not working here. And that's like, the pandemic came, and I had just moved to California. I'm living now on the coast there in the south of Big Sur. Someone found me a little kind of Merton-type hermitage on 1,000 acres on the ocean. What could I do? Just in honor of Merton, I just said, okay, I'll live there. And then the pandemic came, and I wrote my bucket list dream was to write a 4-volume box set commentary on the Gospels. What's not to like? But the publisher said, no, you're only doing one book. I'm not publishing 1,000 pages by you. Someone's got to stop you. No respect. Anyway, it's the Gospel of Peace, a commentary on Matthew, Mark, and Luke from a Gandhian, Kingian hermeneutic of nonviolence. Again, I'm trying to impress a Mark of nothing. You know, that's just that big highfalutin word that means perspective. As if Gandhi and Martin Luther King are going through each sentence of the Gospel saying, see, Jesus is even more nonviolent than us. Isn't that great? It's never been done before. So you each have to buy 5 copies. And give them to your priests and ministers and bishops. No, I'm quite serious. This is my life's work. I don't know how else we're going to educate one another in nonviolence. And if you can stand it, what I'd like to do is just say a little bit about nonviolence and Jesus and Gandhi and King and Dorothy Day and then Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And then we'll take a few questions, and then by the end, we will have resolved everything. How does that sound like a plan? And can I thank the co-sponsors here? The Epiphany Church. And how many of you are in the famous Epiphany Gospel of Peace study group? Thank you. All right, great. And you can sign up over there. And is it the Strathmore Presbyterian Church? Thank you for co-sponsoring too. And the Passionists here at the Earth and Spirit Center. How about a round of applause for the Earth and Spirit Center for welcoming us? Is anybody here from the Earth and Spirit Center? No. Oh yeah, in the back. Thank you for having me. Thank you. So Gandhi is just like obsessed with this clumsy word, which I know doesn't work, but I love it. And nobody in history was using it, even though it's from the Jains and ancient Hinduism. And he talks about it morning, noon, and night, and so did Dr. King. And that's what I've been talking about, and a lot of you have been talking about, ahimsa. And he's thinking about it 125 years ago, and the ancient meaning was like, do no harm in thought, word, or deed. Well, I've been thinking about that lately. All you holy peacemakers of Louisville, one of my favorite places. Let's think about that. You're never going to hurt another human being ever again for the rest of your lives. You're never going to say another harmful word to any human being ever again for the rest of your lives. Okay. You're never going to think another harmful thought toward another human being ever again for the rest of your lives. How's that all going for you, though? That's the beginning of nonviolence, friends. And Gandhi's talking nonviolence morning, noon, and night, and he goes, wow, this is a whole new way of life. This is the spiritual life. Because if you got money and guns, or nukes, or tanks, fighter bombers, you don't need God. Who needs God? You're good to go. But if you're unarmed and poor and trying to be totally nonviolent like Gandhi and Dorothy Day and Dr. King, you need God. God is your rock and security. And that's where Gandhi just takes it and runs with it and develops, well, what we could call a universal ethic, the law of God, God's politics, the methodology of God, that social change only happens through bottom-up people power, grassroots movements of nonviolence. Isn't that great? And I really like this word that nobody else likes and nobody else uses, and I invite you to keep using it here in Louisville. And as we study Gandhi and Dr. King and try to figure out how to be nonviolent. And let me also just say thank you to all of you for all the great good that you've been doing for peace and justice in Louisville and Kentucky and throughout your lives, and for, you know, all those in need, and for the churches, and for God, and for Jesus. I just want to encourage you to keep at it. But Gandhi comes along and says, Jesus is the greatest person of nonviolence in the history of the world. That's so beautiful. And then poor Gandhi says 125 years ago, and it seems to me that the only people who don't know on that Jesus is nonviolent are Christians. And I've been asking everywhere I go around the country, is he right? You certainly wouldn't get it from the sense of Christians these days. Catholics, whoever we are, we're just like mean as can be. We're all for war and divisive and racist and greedy, and those are our good points. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I misspoke. No, it's like we're living some kind of anti-gospel, some kind of spirituality of violence, a theology of war. The good news is, blessed are the war makers. Kill your enemies. I mean, sheesh. So if Gandhi's right, we're getting somewhere. If he's wrong, if Jesus is violent, I propose to heck with him. We don't need Jesus. We are experts in violence, all of us, every one of us. We're all brainwashed and raised in this awful culture of violence. It's insane. My friend Daniel Berrigan called it it. We're addicted to death as a social methodology. That's what we're doing. If Gandhi is right, if this guy is the epitome of nonviolence in human history, if he's the incarnation of nonviolence, the face of the God of peace and total nonviolence, now we're getting somewhere. This is good news. And that's what I was trying to write about, to go through and look at the gospel sentence by sentence. So I thought maybe I would just talk about some of the things I'm interested in, but you can ask me questions, and maybe some of you have the book. And, you know, you take it with your grain of salt, or just, you know, if you're going through the book, it's a commentary. So you can use it as a reference book for the rest of your life. This is my thinking. But grapple with it yourself. Was Jesus nonviolent here in this story, in this scene? What does this mean for me? How am I practicing nonviolence these days? Where am I in the story? How am I following this nonviolent Jesus? And what is my next step on the journey as the world is getting worse by the minute? And it's only going to get worse by the minute. And that's why I'm basically trying to say to all of us tonight with you, we need something more than America, you know, to survive the years that are coming ahead of us. And I propose the gospel of peace, the nonviolence of Jesus, that we put all our chips like never before, and we try to go plumb the depths of total nonviolence and universal love as Gandhi and Dorothy Day and Dr. King did. That's worth doing, and we can really be of service to God and one another. So can I say a few words about Matthew, Mark, and Luke, or have you already had enough? You're being very nonviolent. So Matthew, as I take it, of course, he's writing for the Jewish Christian community, so the whole thing is focusing on the Jewish emphasis, and the message, of course, is we found the Messiah. It's just he's not quite the guy we were hoping for. It's a big setback. He's not going to have a military overthrow of the Roman Empire in Jerusalem and bring about the kingdom of God by killing everybody, which is what we're still hoping for. Someone will come in and kill somebody. Let's hope. No, he's a totally nonviolent Messiah. And he portrays, Matthew portrays Jesus as the new Moses coming down from the mountaintop with the new commandments, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount. Friends, you can't read it enough. And I'm so glad it kind of begins the way it's laid up. You know Gandhi read from the Sermon on the Mount every morning and every evening the last 45 years of his life. And just for the record, just to remind you, he's not a Christian. Did I hear that some of you are Christians? Maybe even Catholic in Louisville, Kentucky? Are you reading the Sermon on the Mount every single day? So I invite you to do that. Because Gandhi says it's the greatest writings on nonviolence in the history of the world. No one had ever said this before. It's like a handbook on how to be a human being. This is the catechism. This is a how to practice nonviolence book. And the thing is, on my bad days, I sometimes think, was Gandhi the only person in history who took Jesus that seriously? Where Matthew has compiled all the fundamental teachings in like one big campaign platform speech. I thought that would impress you, but it didn't. But anyway, and on nonviolence, and Gandhi just said, I'm just going to do what the guy says, even though I don't understand it, even though I might disagree with it, and I'm going to act my way into a new way of thinking. So Gandhi wasn't Gandhi. He became Gandhi. Really, over 40 years by just doing what the guy said. And that's what I invite us to do. And it begins with the famous Beatitudes, which you've heard many times. But as you know, the Aramaic, which is the language Jesus spoke, Jesus didn't speak Hebrew or Latin or Greek. He spoke Aramaic, which really doesn't exist now. And there was this French scholar who gave his life trying to figure out the lost language of Aramaic, and he's translated only, it got as far as the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer. And it doesn't begin, blessed are the poor. That's not what it says in the Aramaic. Do you all know this? Yes. You don't? Doesn't even just like, oh, blessed are you, peacemaker. Aren't you nice? In the Aramaic, this guy says it means arise, get up, get moving, and start walking. You who are poor in spirit and mournful and meek and gentle and nonviolent, arise and walk forth, all of you people who are hungering and thirsting for justice, you who are merciful and pure in heart, arise, resurrection, walk forth, discipleship. Walking this means that you who are peacemakers, you who are being persecuted, and rejoice and be glad when you're in trouble, because now you get to practice nonviolence. You're looking at me like, boy, he's got to cut back on the coffee. Okay, that may be true, but you get to be Dr. King and Dorothy Day and Gandhi. But isn't that great? Doesn't that sound like Jesus empowering poor, oppressed people on the outskirts of an empire? Arise and walk forth, you peacemakers. And that, to me, is the climax of it. And I find it so important to ponder, and you think that Gandhi read this stuff every single day. Blessed are the peacemakers. You go into this culture of insanity, this war that's raging around the earth and against Mother Earth and against the poor and the children from Gaza and Ukraine to Louisville, and you speak out for peace and say no to all wars and all killing. Why? Because you're the beloved daughters, the beloved sons of the God of peace. You can't help yourself. Hey, I'd love to kill for you in your war, but I'm a son of God. What can I do? Sorry. And God's a peacemaker, so I go and make peace. That's so profound. This is the beginning of nonviolence. Your identity, your fundamental identity. And this culture of war and killing, every time I'm comfortable with you, I've been saying this, is always telling you who you are and we go right along. You're a good American. You're a Republican. Or you're a Democrat. Or you're a citizen of Kentucky. Now, that's nice and whatever, but that's not who you are. Jesus tells you who you are. You are the beloved daughter of the Creator of the universe, the beloved son of the God of peace. Claim that as your identity and live that out. That's what Gandhi did. And that's what Matthew's trying to get us to do. And then we get the six antitheses. Are you okay with me still talking like this about the gospel? Because I just love it all so much. And you've heard it. It's just, no one had ever said this stuff before. You have heard it said, thou shalt not kill. Okay, Jesus, I'm with you on that. I say to you, don't even get angry. Well, no, wait a second, Jesus. Anger is a neutral emotion, as all the psychologists say. We have to be angry. In fact, if you're not angry, something's wrong with you, and I'm really angry at you for saying that. Don't even get angry. He's trying to root out the roots of violence within us. So he says, whatever you do, this is just the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Don't pray. I didn't make this up. Go and read it. You are getting angry. Renounce the anger in you or give it to God. And then think of all the people you have hurt during your life who are hurt, that you've hurt, and who still have hurt feelings toward you. And in the Greek, he says, don't go to the altar. And this is a word Merton loved, Mark, as you know. Katagalite. Go and be reconciled. You apologize to all the people you have hurt who are angry with you. Then go to the altar and give your gift to God. Gandhi took that seriously. The week before he was assassinated, the reporter said to him, what's the greatest thing you did in your life? Well, I took Jesus seriously, and I decided to to conserve my anger. Because Jesus is saying, this is what Gandhi said. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, whatever you're doing, this is important for us in this bad time, avoid these two emotions if you want to live a lifelong nonviolence, anger and fear. Don't practice them. They won't sustain you. But whatever you do, cultivate these two emotions, grief and joy. I already said it. Blessed are those who mourn. Rejoice and be glad when you're persecuted. And my friend Archbishop Tutu used to talk to me about that. And he lived that out. And Thich Nhat Hanh and Dan and Dr. King, they were really fun people. And they were always grieving. And the key to understanding Matthew, in my opinion, I met someone earlier who was saying she sort of disagrees with my take on Matthew, which is totally fine. I want you to figure it out. I'm not naming names. But anyway, I see Jesus as lamenting. He's in grief all the time. And once you can begin to, as you're reading the story, for clues about how to practice nonviolence now, if you see that he's grieving, then it begins to make sense. And so we have to become more conscious of grief. I mean, and I'm saying, don't watch the news. Go for walks, be in prayer, and grieve with Mother Earth. Grieve with the children of Gaza and Ukraine. And grieve with the people who are dying from gun violence and poverty and war in the U.S. and around the world. And rejoice over the beauties of life. And even the struggle, it's so beautiful. But that's not what I was going to talk about. The really most important one is the fifth. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you. Gandhi said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth just makes the whole world blind and toothless. Isn't that what Gaza is about? I mean, this horrific killing by Hamas of those people at the concert. So let's kill 35,000. And all of them, half of them children. That ought to bring peace. It's insanity. Violence in response to violence always leads to further violence. War is going to bring peace. One of these days it will totally work. No! War always sows the seeds for future wars. Violence always sows the seeds for further violence. We're talking about death. And the meanings and metaphors of using death as if that was a way of life goes against everything God had in mind and what it means to be a human being. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye. I say to you, and I want you to memorize this with me in the Greek, This is the actual best translation. Offer no violent resistance to one who does evil. Offer no violent resistance to one who does evil. There it is. Nonviolence draws a boundary line in the sand. I always joke that, you know, the church is really supposed to be, I said this at the Vatican, and I didn't think it went over that well, Corey, that the church is, I thought, this is supposed to be a community of total nonviolence. Did I get that wrong? Like, if Jesus is totally nonviolent, the churches are communities of total nonviolence. And makes sense to me. Therefore, since we live in a world of violence and we're like addicted to violence, every time you go to church or tonight is just a 12-step meeting of Violence Anonymous. Hi, I'm John. I'm addicted to violence. Hi, John. I'm telling you my sad story. We turn to our higher power. I'm trying to make restitution. And we're all together trying to become sober people of nonviolence. Offer no violent resistance to one who does evil. That's a commandment, friends. And the thing is, Gandhi wrestled with that sentence every morning and every evening. I've been telling the details about it, but once I get going, we'll be here all night. But just to say, he got that from Leo Tolstoy, who got that from Aidan Bellow's son. Aidan Bellow was the assistant to William Lloyd Garrison and the abolitionists. There's an actual lineage of nonviolence that I begin the book with from Matthew that we want to be part of, too. So Tolstoy gave the last 25 years of his life writing about that one sentence. Wow. We would not be here without Tolstoy. And Tolstoy completely failed, except he gets this letter in 1907. Dear Mr. Tolstoy, I've been reading your writings on this nonviolent stuff. I will give my whole life to teaching the whole world. And Tolstoy went to his death knowing that this unknown guy who wrote it, Mohandas Gandhi, was going to be the greatest person in history. And that's why we're here tonight. Because Gandhi studied that sentence. And unlike everybody else in history, well, did anybody read that sentence and believe it? You know, the world says someone's going to do violence to you. We've always been taught this. Walter Wink explained it. You got two options. You fight back with violence or you run away and do nothing. And Gandhi is saying, Jesus says, no, there's a third option. You stand your ground. You don't engage in the means of violence. But you don't run away. You say, hey, don't hurt me. You reach out and talk to the person as a brother, as a child of God, with the Spirit of God working through you and a spirit of love and truth, finding our common ground of humanity, even to the point of accepting suffering without a trace of the desire to retaliate with further violence or inflict suffering until the scales fall from his eyes and he puts down his gun and we become friends and live happily ever after. Gandhi says, oh my God, I think this guy didn't mean this just for individuals. Dr. King said Gandhi was the first person to apply this teaching to nation states and the whole planet. And Gandhi's thinking, can I get the horrible British Empire to leave India nonviolently? Can we use the power of nonviolence to completely disarm Kentucky? Sure, if we try with all our life energy and prayer and effort. As Gandhi said, full effort is full victory. That's the kind of level of nonviolence we need. Well, then we get to the sixth antithesis, if you're still with me. You have heard it said, love your countrymen and hate your enemy, but I say, agape your enemy. Love your enemy. It's not the person you don't like, the person at work you don't like, the horrible neighbor down the street. No, it's nation-state language. The people being targeted by your nation for death. The Vietnamese people. The people of Central America. Iraq, Afghanistan. Well, if you go down the list, Syria, Libya, Palestine, South Africa. The whole world now with nuclear weapons. We are people who practice universal, all-encompassing, all-inclusive, total, sacrificial, unconditional love for everybody with one catch. There is no cause for which we will ever again support the taking of a single human life. Friends, that's the most political sentence, not only in the whole Bible, but in all of human history. We know no one ever said those words before, love your enemies. But what's so fantastic for me is, there in that same sentence, Jesus gives the best explanation of the nature of the mystery of God. Why do we love our enemies? Well, didn't we just agree? You are the sons and daughters of the God who lets the sun rise on the good and the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. The good and the bad and the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. God practices universal love. So because we're sons and daughters of that God, we practice universal love. Didn't we just agree we're all peacemakers because we're sons and daughters of the God of peace? That's deep, profound theology and spirituality. The good news is that God is nonviolent. That's the scandal of Jesus. And we spent the last 2,000 years denying and doing everything but that and living out that. But I wonder, friends, do you really want a God of universal love? Do you want a God of nonviolence? We're so brainwashed into hoping and praying that God will throw, well, let's just say, those people into hell. I mean, they deserve it. No! That's not going to be, it's not like that at all. Universal love, universal compassion, universal peace, total nonviolence. So the Sermon on the Mount goes on and on like this. And then Jesus models it and practices it. Matthew has these beautiful little teachings, like where only in Matthew Jesus says, come to me, all you who labor and have every burden, remember, and I will give you rest. For I am gentle and meek of heart. Meek being the biblical word, according to Thomas Merton, of nonviolence. And in Merton's essay, Blessed for the Meek, The Christian Roots of Nonviolence, Merton says, it's not passivity. It's the nonviolence of Martin Luther King and Gandhi. Active, daring, public, creative nonviolence, in your face, almost aggressive, militant nonviolence, Dr. King called it. That's the language of Jesus. Only Matthew says Jesus is totally nonviolent inside him. Isn't that great? Dan Berrigan said to me as a kid one day, Jesus didn't have a mean bone in his body. I love that. So you're reading the Gospel of Matthew, and we get to that part, you brood of vipers, you whitened sepulchres, especially you people there, your dead bones and dead men's tombs that people walk over and they don't even know. And we're thinking, now we're getting somewhere. This is good. Now we get a little... No! And you forgive me for my silliness, but I don't know how to talk about it. I think we project all our anger and violence onto the gospel. We're so brainwashed that we can't even imagine what Jesus is like. But forgive me for being such an eavesdropper, but through Dan I got to know for 30 years Thich Nhat Hanh, the great Zen Buddhist master, who was so sweet and wonderful and my friend. And you know, I was running this campaign, which I've been to Louisville and talked about. We were trying to close Los Alamos in New Mexico, the birthplace of the bomb, where business is booming. And all the millionaires, everyone who works there is a millionaire, 20,000 people, they all go to Mass in church every Sunday. The churches are packed. And the priest and the minister bless the nukes, and then they get back to work on Monday. And I'm telling Thich Nhat Hanh that. You know, and I was really punished by the then archbishop for leading prayers outside the gates of Los Alamos. And then I was banned from praying for peace. So I didn't go. But the press showed up and was asking where it was, and all the Pax Christi people told them, and it was the headline of the state newspaper, Archbishop bans priest from praying for peace. I told him he shouldn't do it, but he didn't listen to me. And what was I talking about? Listen to your moments. You don't even remember. Anyway. Thich Nhat Hanh. I'm saying this to Thich Nhat Hanh, and he goes like this to me. Did you hear what I said? I rest my case. That's Jesus. You look at the film footage of Gandhi, and they're going, Mr. Gandhi, are you ready to die for the struggle? And he goes, He's not bombastic. And I think that's the way Jesus would. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "You mean to tell me those beautiful people are such profound hypocrites that they're possessed by death, worshiping God and planning the destruction of the planet? They don't even know that they are owned by death. They're worshiping death." It's the same thing Jesus said, but there's not screaming and yelling going on. No. So Jesus leads his campaign, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's the same story, friends. It's all written around the year 70. We know that all the historians, Josephus, a non-Christian, writes, in the year 70, there were all these Hamas-type rebel groups, one of them being the Zealots, but there were lots of them, whose sole goal was to kill the Roman soldiers. And Jesus is going, "If you don't follow my way of nonviolence, you're going to be destroyed." We know in the year 70, Rome came in and completely annihilated Jerusalem. So Mark is written just before that. Matthew and Luke are written just after that. John is written 50 years later. Rewrites the whole story. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the same story. Jesus organizes the poor and oppressed people in the outback of Galilee in a Gandhian, Kingian grassroots movement of bottom-up people power, nonviolence. And they march to Jerusalem. And he goes into the temple where the religious authorities are working with the empire to steal all the money of the people in the name of God. And they have a very complex banking system to change your evil Roman money into our holy Roman money. It's going to cost you a fortune, but we have to happen so that we can kill 150,000 lambs to appease this god of war. And Jesus turns over the tables of the money changers and says, "No more injustice. We're going to be people of peace." It lasts about 1 minute, and then Mark, Matthew say he spent the rest of the day teaching the Sermon on the Mount. He doesn't yell at anybody, hit anybody, get angry at anybody, hurt anybody, whip anybody, shoot anybody, kill anybody, or drop any nuclear bombs. I just wanted to clarify that. Because Truman said, "Well, Jesus was violent in the temple, so I can drop the nuclear bomb." He's just doing the insanity that we all think. It's total nonviolent civil disobedience. I've been arrested at least 85 times and spent about a year of my life in jail. Thank you very much. And I'm an ex-con, and I can't vote, and I'm not allowed in a lot of countries. I'm not allowed in Canada because of my long felony record, as you have, as you do. And I'm going to be there Monday, so I'm very excited. How am I going to get in? Will they arrest me? The last time I crossed the border, they said, "And what are you doing?" "I'm just going to see friends." And I'm speaking to the Bishop of Toronto and all these people. And the guy looks at me, looks at the computer, looks at me. "Well, good luck with the talk, Father dear." You're all aware I'm doing. Anyway, what I'm trying to say, there was a method here to my madness. You don't go screaming and yelling when you do civil disobedience. When I go to the White House, what day is today? Thursday. I think on Tuesday, 50 friends walked into under the U.S. Congress. Do you know this? And sat in that Senate cafeteria and unfurled banners saying, "Send food to Gaza, not bombs," and shut down the whole Senate Congress cafeteria. Totally nonviolent, didn't yell at anybody, but you have to be meticulously centered and peaceful to do civil disobedience. That's what I know. If you start yelling and screaming, they're going to kill you. In fact, in Mark, if you don't mind me digressing, I'm thinking, I was teaching this class to confirmation kids in the desert of New Mexico, and they were so bored. So I threw out the book and I gave them each a Bible, and we opened up to Mark, verse 1, chapter 1, and I said, "Your goal is to tell me how much you hate the gospel." Well, they all sat up and were ready. This was some kind of secret Jesuit jujitsu kind of thing. And they get about three sentences in, and it says, "John the Baptist appeared to people in the desert talking about the kingdom of God," and this kid goes, "Hey, he's just like us." And we were off and running. So one day, we get to the sentence, and this kid goes, "This is the stupidest sentence in the whole Bible." I never forgot he said this. And the sentence reads, they get to Jerusalem, "Jesus walks into the temple and looks around and then leaves. And the next morning he got up and walked in and turned over the tables of the money changers and said, you have made it a den of thieves and it's a house of prayer. And he goes, why did he do that? And I said, he's casing the joint. That's what you do if you're going to be nonviolent and break the law. Say, okay, this is where it is. This is what I'll do here. This is not brain surgery, but it's scary. It's revolutionary. It's provocative, public, dramatic, in-your-face, nonviolent, civil disobedience. I think everything Jesus did was illegal. That he was doing civil disobedience every 15 minutes. That's why I consider him, he's like a one-man crime wave walking through the Roman Empire. It was a good try, though. No, you know, and we have blamed so much on that. Especially El Greco. You remember his painting from the 1500s? Of Jesus in the temple, and Jesus has a 30-foot long whip. And there's all these women in long evening gowns running like this. There's no women allowed in the temple. And there's no whip. It's John, 50 years later, who rewrites the whole story. I wrote a whole book on it, the Lazarus book over on the table. That's why they wouldn't let me have John in this book. And he ends with the raising of Lazarus. And why would the Johannine community rewrite the story? They have to do something better to wake us up. Lazarus represents the whole human race, dead, in the culture of death. And the God of life says, take away the stone. Humanity, come out of the culture of death. Unbind humanity and let it go free. Isn't that fantastic? Well, he moves the civil disobedience in the temple to the very beginning. It's the wedding of Cana. The next thing you know, Jesus is turning over tables. And it's there that it says, in the Greek, he took, and there's this long, like, 30-letter word that only appears once in the whole Bible. And he took this, and in the Greek, it means hemp. This type of hemp. How do you get 150,000 lambs up five stories into this massive building? They were country people leading all these animals for miles and miles with the only thing they had, this type of hemp. Jesus took the hemp, the thousands of lambs see it, and they go, oh, thank God, it's time to go home. Jesus is an animal rights activist. He saved all the animals, too. It doesn't say he took the hemp and hit anybody. It says he drove them all out, meaning the animals. But I digress. So he does the civil disobedience. When you do that, you're going to be arrested. And Matthew makes a big fuss of the, remember, the Jewish context. If you're still, is this okay? You're hanging in here with me? I know it's like 10 o'clock already. And the guy never shuts up. But they're in the upper room. He takes the bread. My body broken for you. He takes the cup, my blood shed for you. I always say, if he were a good Roman, if he were a good American, if he were a good military person like he should have been, he should have said, if he were a real Messiah, go break their bodies for me. Go shed their blood for me. No, friends, my body broken for you, my blood shed for you. Do this. Every time you participate in Eucharist, in Christian communion, you are participating, Matthew says, in the new covenant of nonviolence, the methodology of God, our preference to undergo suffering and death rather than inflict suffering or death. From now on, Gandhi wrote about that. I read those things. Dan Berrigan is always telling me that at Mass every time. Why doesn't people understand this? You don't like that? I was saying this once to this packed church 20 years ago during the Iraq War. There were like 1,000 people, and this very sweet, gentle lady stood up and went, you know, John, this stuff is really fascinating. This nonviolent stuff, I'm not kidding you, I find it really interesting. It's very intriguing. And peace? Peace? Me? This is what she said in front of the crowd. Me, personally, I'm a big fan of peace. But John, sometimes you gotta kill somebody. And that's what you're all thinking. Where does Jesus say, love your enemies, but if they're really bad, follow these, and you follow these seven conditions, you can bomb the hell out of them? That's what we just said in Rome for the first time in history. Pope Francis had said, at this historic conference that we were at in 2016. There is no such thing as a just war. There never was, but now there definitely never is. And Jesus is total nonviolence. And she's right, though, because we know in the year 315, the horrible Emperor Constantine supposedly publicly converted to Christianity. Now remember, Christianity is an underground, illegal movement that's considered like Hamas. If you're a member of this movement, you're killed that day because you're saying our guy's God, not your God. And we're not going to fight for your God. So you get martyred. And then 315, Constantine says, okay, Christianity is legal, and now you can all join the Roman military. And we all went, oh, thank God. And we've been soldiers ever since for 1700 years. And then he said, and by the way, you don't need that Sermon on the Mount anymore. Why don't you start using our guy Cicero, the pagan, and they began justification for mass murder that led to the just war theory. It has nothing to do with Jesus. It's blasphemy. That's what the Pope said. That's what we said. So I said to this nice lady, if you're still with me there, go to the scene next in the Garden of Gethsemane. Are you still okay with me going on ranting and raving like this about Jesus and nonviolence? Somebody said to me last week, why are you going around the country inflicting nonviolence on everybody? I said, somebody has to. You're just a bully for peace and nonviolence. I said, oh, thank you. That's so nice of you. Here come the horrible Roman soldiers. What? There's 100 of them. With all the muckety-mucks, the chief priests and the head of the scribes and the Pharisees, and they all have big swords. And what? There may be, let's say there's 50 people, let's be generous, in the Jesus movement. Men and women, his people in his community circle. And they're hiding out. They're an illegal movement. It's the middle of night. And they're in the Mount of Olives, which is on the hill before the valley going over. And there's Jerusalem down there. And what is Peter thinking? Peter's thinking, if there's ever a just war in all of human history, if there's ever a moment to kill for God, in the name of God, when violence is divinely sanctioned, when we should kill for God's sake, it's now in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he's right. Our guy's in trouble. The Holy One's in trouble. They're going to get him. We've got to do something. So he takes up the sword, and just as he goes to kill, the commandment comes down. Dear friends, memorize these words with me. Put down the sword. Those are the last words of Jesus to the church. It's the last thing his best friends heard him say before he died. Think about it. I didn't make that up. It's right there in the Gospels. And it's the first time they understood how serious Jesus is about nonviolence. They sat through the Sermon on the Mount. They had 3 years of all-day-long retreats on nonviolence and universal love. That's all the poor guy's talking about. I go at length in the book to try to explain it. That's all he's talking about. And we just don't want to hear it. And you know, you read Luke, and he ups this even more. You know, people always say to me, what would you do if somebody came? I mean, you're going to intervene? I'm going, yeah, nonviolently. In Luke, it says Peter jumps in, and what happens? He cuts off the ear of the slave of the high priest. Of course, first of all, the poor servant of the high priest, he's just caught and being killed. That's the poor are always the victims of our war. But what would happen next? Now think it through. In like 3 seconds, those 100 drunken Roman soldiers who are bored to death are now getting the crazy lunatic, are going to all pull out their swords, and what's about to happen in 5 seconds? A massacre. They're all going to be killed. And who knows how many of the Jesus community all have swords and are ready to kill. What does Jesus do? Study Luke. He steps into the fight and says, stop. No more of this. And he heals the poor man. And he saves everybody's life. Nobody is killed. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John are adamant. They all left him over nonviolence. And Gandhi says Jesus goes to his death in meticulous nonviolence, just as the execution of Jesus is meticulously legal. Now, you know, we're in the Easter season, and the way I look at resurrection is you know, well, there's so much to say about it. You know, I don't know about you, but having been, you know, raised a Jesuit, I think, well, what would I do if I were the savior of the world? Let's ponder that for a minute. That's the way we think. I came down and explained everything to you. I was really kind. I taught you universal love and total nonviolence and infinite compassion. And God is love and peace and compassion. And what did you do? You betrayed me and denied me and arrested me and abandoned me and ran away from me and brutally tortured me and brutally mocked me and executed me. And then I died and I went up to God and she said, I need you to go back down there. I go, I'm not going back down to those horrible people. And I'd be resentful and angry for about 5,000 years. We get resentful over the smallest things. Jesus comes back and makes breakfast for these people. I always joke, a little over the top with the nonviolence, Jesus. He's as gentle and peaceful as can be. That's why resurrection means for me having nothing to do with death. Not having a trace of death in you. Which means not having a drop of violence in you. Which means resurrection means total nonviolence. And you and I, if we dare practice active, creative, gospel, Gandhian, Kenyan nonviolence, what we're really doing is getting ready for resurrection. That's not what Matthew says. I really invite you to ponder that. It all makes sense to me. God affirms this life of ultimate nonviolence. And Jesus comes back. And says, I mean, the last sentence of Matthew is amazing. Go make disciples of nonviolence of all the nations. That's your mission, folks. But Matthew, you're looking at me like, oh, this guy, I'm sorry I'm going on and on, but I just can talk about him all night. Matthew, I think it is so funny because they killed the poor guy, and there's like these 10 sentences where the muckety-mucks and the horrible soldiers are going, well, you know, Pax Christi, Catholic worker, Epiphany, passionist, earth and spirit centered group. They're up to something. They're going to steal the body and say he rose from the dead. We better go talk to Pilate. And they go to talk to Pilate. They have a big confab. And Pilate goes, you're right. They're going to do something. So he orders the centurion himself to take 100 armed guards with big swords. And they stand all around the tomb to guard it. And they put the Roman imperial seal right on the stone. It's incredible. And it says in Latin, in 3 sentences, we killed you, you're dead, now stay there. And Jesus breaks the law and rises from the dead. Resurrection is illegal. He commits civil disobedience all over again, and he's out and about today causing good trouble in his illegal movement. He's like,
listeners, we're out of time. Our guest today has been the Reverend John Deere. Our program that featured John Deere will be repeated April 16th at 8 a.m. and April 17th at 6 a.m. You can listen live stream by visiting our website at forwardradio.org and clicking on Listen Live Now. The Solutions of Balance program featuring John Deere will be placed in our archives. To listen via our archives, just visit our website at forwardradio.org, scroll down to Program Archives, and then scroll down to the Solutions of Balance program that features John Deere. Please respond to us with your thoughts and suggestions by visiting us at solutionsofbalance18@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Today's Solutions of Balance program is the first in a 2-part series that features John Deere. The second in a series featuring John Deere will air April 23rd, 24th, and 25th. We'd like to thank the Bellarmine Thomas Merton Center, Louisville's Earth and Spirit Center, and Louisville's Fellowship of Reconciliation for sponsoring the event that featured John Deere. For Solutions of Balance Radio, I'm Jim Johnson. Our editor is Carolyn Brooks Johnson. Thanks for listening.